Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Kaboom!
To take you deeper in your parenting. The date today is January the 25th, 2013. I'm here with my great friend and co-host, Jeff Emery. How are you, sir?
Man, I cannot believe that we are already at the end of January.
Isn't that nuts?
It's crazy.
Hey, I'm just saying, I got a birthday rolling around here, so.
Oh, man, we gotta make some special plans so we can go out and have fun and...
You want to hear a funny story?
Tell me a funny story, Trey.
When your birthday came down, it was actually doing one of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about your birthday and one of your biggest letdowns, right? And so what was the one thing that you wanted for your birthday that you didn't get? You remember what it was? That you thought you were going to get and you didn't because you were promised it by a doctor or a nurse or something. You remember what it was?
I'm drawing a blank.
It was a Darth Vader mask.
That was a story about when I was a little kid going into surgery. But yeah, I remember telling the story that day, yeah.
So you know what I did?
Uh-huh.
I ordered you one for your birthday. It's lost.
Really?
It shows that it shipped. It showed that it delivered to my door. And my wife was home all day, and we've contested it, but we can't. I mean, it's gone.
Once again, I'm disappointed, Trey. Once again, yeah. My childhood dream of getting this Darth Vader mask has been crushed. No, I'm all right. No, I'm sure I'll recover from that. I'll tell you though that when the doctor told me that I was going to get that mask, you know, it was something that I highly anticipated coming out of that surgery, but it's okay, you know. I've learned to deal with disappointment in my life, and I'll tell you, I actually had I had a disappointment earlier this week, and one of those kind of frustrating things. I don't know if you've ever gone to a restaurant and as you're putting your order in, you're like, okay, well, this is going to be pretty simple. I'm not doing a complicated order. I'm just doing something, you know. Here's a combo meal, and so I was at a restaurant the other day, and you know, talking across the counter. This wasn't even through one of the little voice box things, but talking across the counter to the guy, he's taking my order, and as he's bringing it to me, he says, "All right, well, here's your combo, here's your fries, and here's your drink. It's an unsweet tea." And I looked at him and I'm like, "Well, I appreciate that, but I wanted a sweet tea." And he's like, "Oh, hey, no problem. I'll get you that." And I'm like, "All right." So he turns around and he gets me a sweet tea and brings it back around. And he goes, "Here's the sweet tea for you." He said, "I'm sorry, but you said unsweet tea, so that's what I made for you." And I'm like, "Well, thank you for switching it, but I'm pretty sure I ordered a sweet tea." And he's like, "Oh, well, I got you what you ordered." And I was like, "Okay, well, thank you." Right. So I didn't say anything, but in my head, I'm sitting here going, "Man, what lousy customer service is that?" I mean, I'm not one of those guys who believes the customer's always right, but I'm sitting here in my head thinking, okay, maybe you misheard me. Maybe I misspoke, but don't sit there and blame the customer for getting the order wrong. You just say, "Hey, I'm sorry there was a mistake. Let me get it fixed." But I don't know what was going through his head about this need to tell me that I ordered wrong, you know? But I guess what we had there was a failure to communicate.
A failure to communicate. Let me play something for you guys. Hang on just a second.
"Don't you ever talk that way to me.
Never! Never!
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. And I don't like it any more than you, man."
So you see, that sets us up for what we're going to talk about today. And for those of you guys that don't know, that's a clip from the very popular show Cool Hand Luke. And anyway, it sets us up for what we're going to talk about today, because we're going to talk about the top 10 most common communication mistakes that we see. Now, first off, we want to make sure that we kind of engender this when we say, when we're going to go over this, this is something that is universally applicable. So this not only is something that you can take and kind of stick in your pipe to smoke later for your kids, but it's also something that you can take with you when it comes to your spouses, your employees, your employers. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to highly recommend this. I'm going to be honest, I was reading, Jeff put this list together and it is beautifully well done, because this is the top stuff that I see people struggling with the most. When people come into me and they say, okay, Trey, here's my problem, because I do a lot of that kind of that individual consultation with people, and they'll say, Trey, I've got this and that and this and this, and my kid does that and that and this. And I'm going to say that in many cases, and I'm almost going to go and say in half of the cases, one of the biggest primary issues is communication.
Sure.
And we're going to talk about the top 10 most common that Jeff and I see overall. Why are a lot of the problems occurring? Well, it's not because there's two unfair parties or even two unfair ideas or beliefs or wants or desires, but a lot of times they're just stinking at trying to get the other person to understand.
And, you know, it's really interesting because we communicate every day, and it's not that we're poor communicators. I may be a great communicator at work. I may be a great communicator in this circumstance or that circumstance. But for some reason, when it comes to close personal relationships, we often fall into communication patterns that aren't very healthy. And so even though I can be very effective in this circumstance or that circumstance, I find myself in a relationship issue where my communication becomes less effective because of something else that's going on. So a lot of these points, like you said, are things that we see that come up as folks are saying, hey, we have this issue, we have that issue. And we can kind of trace it back to the patterns that they've fallen into in their communication. And so we're going to go through this list, and we might even in the show notes go ahead and put kind of an abbreviated version that kind of does a bullet point of all 10 of these so you can reference them. But then we'll kind of expand things and talk it out here. I suspect that as you and I are giving examples and talking through these, our listeners are going to be like, oh, yeah, that happens.
I did.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, that happened with so-and-so. So this is something that is very relatable.
So let me ask you this, Jeff. Which do you think we should do? Do you think that we should do them like 1 to 10, or do you think we should do them like Letterman style, you know, Dave Letterman style, and do them from 10 and end on 1? Which do you think?
Well, you know, actually, I even put this on the notes that these aren't in any particular order. I don't, you know, depending on your situation, one of these may be really a real problem in your relationship, and others you may be like, oh, yeah, I've heard that before, but it's not really a problem for me. So, I say let's just start at the top and work our way all the way through. Maybe we can ask for some feedback. We can say, hey, after you listen to this, why don't you send us a note? Say, which one of these 10 do you see as the biggest one in your relationship?
Yes.
We kind of get a poll going and get some listener feedback.
So let's start at number one, guys. All right. Number one is talking at someone instead of with this one. Now, I'm going to be honest, guys. I've got to raise my hand when this one comes up. So what do we mean when we say you're talking at something? This is the role that you take when you're with your kid. It's kind of like, I'm the expert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the powerful one. I know all these different things, and you are just going to take what I've got to give you. You know, you're going to take this information that I've got. You're just going to sit there. You're going to take my wisdom, and what you're saying or what your input is, It doesn't matter, right? That is talking at somebody. Now, understand that most communication is what they call didactic. That's just a big blah, blah word for it's two-way. You go one way, it comes back. It goes one way, it comes back. But let's be honest. As parents, sometimes we don't take the didactic approach. We take you're going to listen to me.
Sure.
I'm the parent.
It's the fiat.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm the boss. You're going to do exactly what I've got to say. Now, we talk about that on this show all the time. How well does that mentality of you're going to do what I say, when I say, and how I say it work? When they're little kids, maybe incredibly effectively. But as they get older, it's not always something that works well.
Sure. And we really need to shift our communication style, because if as our kids grow, we don't transition into talking with them and seeking their input, it's going to lead to relationship problems as they get a little bit older. Because what we do when we're talking at our kids or at our partner or at our boss or at our employee, when we're talking at someone rather than talking with them, what we're doing is we're inviting them to see us as arrogant.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm saying what I have to say is more important than you,
exactly.
And I'm not even going to listen to what you have to say. And so without inviting their input, we're setting ourselves up for a problem, because we're inviting them to see us as somebody they don't really want to talk to in the first place, you know? And Trey, honestly, I've had in the past folks who talk at me.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't like to talk to those people. I don't want to have conversation with
them. That's good.
And so, you know, if as a parent I am spending most of my time talking at my kid, it shouldn't surprise me that my kid doesn't want to talk to me.
Well, you know, the issue, I mean, like, so we've talked, like, talking at somebody. So we're gonna shift that to this mentality of how do we talk with our kids?
Mm-hmm.
So the beautiful thing about talking with somebody is that it invites them to see you as someone like who, like, respects them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because kids need to feel like we respect them as well, even when they're not making sense. I'll take an example that happened about 2 weeks ago in our family. We had bought – we don't do ice cream around our house very much. We just don't. And mm-hmm. we love ice cream, but we're on a pretty big push right now to really clean up our eating. We all need to lose some weight, especially my wife and I. So we're being pretty aggressive about certain things right now and what we're eating and really cleaning up. And so we got a thing of like some frozen yogurt the other day that we had in the freezer. And so to our kids, frozen yogurt equals ice cream. They don't care. You know, they're like, woo. And so we had it there and my littlest 2-year-old was like, Dad, I want ice cream. And so it was right before dinner and I was making it and I just said, no, sweetie, we're not gonna do it right now. Dad, I want ice cream. I said, no, sweetie, we're not going to do ice cream right now. We're going to eat first. Dad, I want some ice cream, right? And so at this point, I'm just like, listen here, little girl. we're not going to do the ice cream until after dinner, okay? Right? So what was I doing?
You were doing that talking at her.
I was talking at her. I wasn't listening to her. I wasn't saying, you know what? I can understand how a little kid would want ice cream. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do it. Didn't mean I was willing to cave. But, you know, I started thinking about what all the ways I could have compromised. I tell you what, sweetie, we can do one bite before dinner, and mm-hmm. you can have one bite and you can try it and taste it, but then you're going to have to wait until afterwards. I mean, there was so many things that I could do.
Sure.
So instead of trying to work with them, to talk with them and try to come up with something collaboratively as an example, instead I just wanted to talk at her and tell her, hey, listen, you're going to understand that if you eat your ice cream right now, you're going to be full and you're not going to eat the good stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was that very big, you know, the thing about this, and one of the things I love that you put on here, Jeff, is that it's very boss to employee mentality.
Sure, sure.
And I think that's a brilliant way to put it. And because that mentality of boss to employee is, I'm the boss. It's positional power. We talk about that all the time on here.
It's that positional stuff.
Positional power. I'm the boss. I've got the power. So you're going to do what I say. Instead of it being that persuasive, let's understand why we're not going to, and then compromise and meet them in the middle because I respect you.
Yeah. You know, that situation of the dinner time stuff, or, you know, doing something in some sort of sequence. In my mind as a parent, I have in my head all the reasons why we can't do this ahead of time. But as a little kid, they are not in my head. They don't understand from my position that it's a health thing, that we're going to, you know, that it's a self-control thing, that it's an orderly fashion thing. You know, I don't want to spoil your appetite. And they may have heard me say little snips of that from time to time, but it doesn't mean a whole lot to a kid when they're you offer them ice cream over broccoli or something. They're like, ice cream every time, right?
And, you know, I want to scale this up a little bit, too, to also go into, like, teens and whatnot. I think one of the most erroneous things that parents do, and I'm guilty of this as anybody else, but we see our 16-year-olds and instantly we start thinking, oh, okay, adults now.
Mm.
And a lot of times we expect the same thing from our kids. And so we just we'll talk at our kids. They want a later curfew or something like that. And we may have really good reasons for why we don't want them out past midnight. I understand that. I mean, if a kid ever asks, hey, why can I go out past 12? All of my other friends do. Statistics show. I mean, I have documented research that shows mm-hmm. that most violent crime happens between 12 o'clock and 5 in the morning. I mean, that's just when the most violent crime happens to people. And so we're trying to keep our kids off the streets during that most violent time. I mean, there's a really good reason for that.
Sure.
But a lot of times, we take that boss. I mean, I'm the boss. Here's your job description. This doesn't fit the purview of what I allow you to do in your job description, so you can't do it. And we write it off. And that's not very respectful.
So this communication mistake does not mean that we are poor communicators.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But if we fall into this pattern of talking at somebody rather than talking with them chances are we're going to do it more than just to our kids. We're going to do it to our friends. We're going to do it to our partner. We're going to do it.
It's real good.
And so if we have a habit of doing it in one circumstance, it's going to bleed over into other relationships. And frankly, you know, if you're in the habit of talking at somebody instead of with them, unless you are the boss, when you go into work, if you try to use that pattern, it's not going to fly so well with somebody who's actually in a positional place where they have authority over you for you to talk at them. They're going to be like, excuse me, who's the boss? Who's the employee? Right. So it's an important thing. If this sounds familiar to you and you recognize, man, I do a lot of talking at – or if you have a close relationship with somebody who does a lot of talking at you, you might bring this up to them and say, wow, you know, I'd love for us to change our pattern and for us to talk with each other instead of at each other. So
that's really good. All right, guys. We're going to go on to number two.
Numero dos.
Number two. I'll tell you what, Jeff. You take this one.
All right. Number two, we're calling wandering minds. And what we mean by that is kind of a lack of active listening. You know, active listening means I'm invested. If somebody's telling me something, I'm paying attention. I'm focused. I'm tuned into them, right? But when another person is talking to you and you find your mind wandering – it may be that they're not saying anything very interesting. You know, they're just kind of blah, 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 blah. You know, exactly. I think of the Peanuts cartoons, you know, where all the adults, that's all you hear. And so it's hard to listen to somebody when what they're saying is something that you don't really find interesting. But the thing is, if we allow our minds to wander, what we are doing is it's not just the verbal communication that's going on. We are communicating with our behavior, our wandering minds. We're communicating to them, I don't really care very much about what you have to say. And by association, we're saying that we don't really care about them, right? And that has the potential to damage the relationship. So if you find that there's a person that that you're talking to a lot where you find your mind wandering, one thing that you can do is you can really try to pull yourself back and tell yourself, I'm gonna actively participate in this conversation so that my mind doesn't wander, because I don't want to communicate to my friend, to my partner, to my kid. I don't want to communicate to them that they don't matter to me, because that's what happens when we let our minds wander.
You know, that's really good. Even this week, I can demonstrate something that happened with that. I'm typically really good about anytime my kids are excited about something, about really bending down, you know. But this week, I moved into a very unique position this week where I had the opportunity to make a very lucrative acquisition of something that I've wanted for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to explain it to my wife. I was like, oh man, and it's got this, and it's got that, and it's this particular one, and it's awesome, and it's got all these things. And my wife is an incredible multitasker. She really is. But she was on her computer typing. And I know she heard every single word, but there was that small part of me that just felt like she didn't really hear what I said.
Pay attention to me.
Because she wasn't looking at me. And so finally I was like, Corey, would you please look at me just for a minute while I'm talking about this? I'm really excited about this. And she did. She's so good about that. She stopped and she very politely listened. And we got done and she went back to what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And I find myself, I get so upset when that happens. But the other day, my daughter was trying to come in and tell me that she was a new kind of animal. And it was like part kangaroo and part iguanodon. And, you know, it was all this different stuff, right? Well, it's easy to look at that and say, that's not a big deal, but you nailed it perfect, Jeff. It is important to them. And I caught myself doing it, and I thought, oh, I am being a turd. I am teaching her that if she's not interested in it, you don't need to stop and focus on them. And so I stopped myself what I was doing, and I got down on my knees, and I listened to her talk about her kangaroo iguanodon squirrel, right? And so you got a little visual for that. I sure had a funny one.
Yeah.
But that's so important, because it may not seem like a big deal to us, but to a kid, to them, their interest, it could be huge, and that's really important. If not for the sake of them feeling good about how we're listening to them, who's watching us to learn everything they're going to do in their lives?
Our kids.
Our kids are. And that's – I mean, I think a lot of parents get so angry and upset at their teens and their adolescents because they – they're so disrespectful. And if you really stop and look at it, I'm going to say in most all cases, guess who taught them?
Well, yeah, they picked it up from what they saw their parents doing.
Most cases. Yeah. That's a good one, Jeff.
You know, I had the mental image in my head of a kangaroo, iguanodon, squirrel creature. And I can see headlines in Australia, massive holes all over Australia that are filled with collections of nuts. Scientists are stumped. Creature bouncing around. Anyhow, okay. So we've got the top two there. We listed talking at somebody instead of talking with them. Good. We listed having a wandering mind, not paying attention, pretty much. Number three on our list is this is a big one, Trey, and this is it's kind of ironic because let me say it first. Number three is forgetting to thank the other person, and the reason this is so ironic to me,
that's good,
is because what do we spend the first couple of years of our kids' lives trying to do? Is teach them these manners? You know, well, say please, say thank you, say please, say thank. I don't know how many times I said that to my kids. What do you say? And prompting them so that they would say this. But the truth is, when we interact with somebody on a regular basis, whether it's our partner, whether it's our kids, whether it's our friends, we kind of fall into this pattern of just kind of taking for granted that they know that we're appreciative, you know? And so we stop saying it. And that's unfortunate, because when we forget to say thank you to the other person, when we're just taking for granted that they know that we're appreciative.
Yeah.
Well, over time, if they feel like they've done something special and we don't acknowledge it, well, then they kind of feel kind of stupid for trying. You know, Jeff never even notices. Why do I keep doing this? You know, I want him to – even a simple thank you would be an acknowledgement that he notices what I'm doing. And I do notice it, but you got to learn to say it.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I always kind of have a phrase that I use on this show, on the Family Podcast Network. We always say things like behaviors have a tendency to migrate wherever the most attention is. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't pay attention to our kids, if we're not doing this active this comm failure, this communication failure here of telling them, hey, thank you, good job, I sure do appreciate that. Man, that means a lot to me. When we're not doing those things, behaviors have a tendency to move wherever it is that they get our attention. Right. And I mean, that works on every single scale. Kids will begin to act up and act out just because they can't get their mom's attention any other way. Employees will sometimes, you know, not do things or not do their job well because they get noticed because they're not getting noticed for when they do it right. I mean, right. It's just kind of human nature that we take the road of least resistance if we don't get reinforcement. And that's one of the ways that people ask me, Trey, how do I get my kid to do this task? And I know it's kind of hard for
them. Tell them thank you.
Tell them thank you. Yeah. Tell them good job. Make sure that they notice that you see how good of a job that they're doing. And then kids want that. We love that. We crave that. I think every single one of us, from extrovert to introvert, from any teeny tiny infants all the way up to somebody who's about to die, we all crave that level of attention.
Sure, that level of appreciation, knowing that, yes, that what I'm doing matters to another person, that they, yes, appreciate it. And, you know, I've said this before in youth ministry, but the phrase that I've used to remind myself of that is that we have to develop an attitude of gratitude.
I love that.
Right? Having that attitude of gratitude means that we're looking for ways to thank other people. That we train our brains to have this this view of, when I see somebody doing something, I need to say thank you. I need to appreciate it. I need to.
That's good.
And like you were saying, from a developmental standpoint, we're reinforcing behaviors with our kids when we praise the heck out of it. You know, when we get more of what we pay attention to. So
number four is probably one of my favorites. And guys, if there's any of them that I have a tendency to become the most, if there's any one of them that all of these I have a little bit with, but I work really hard to get these out. One of the ones that I have the most primary difficulty with is this one. Number four, getting defensive instead of saying, I'm sorry. I am sorry. You see, a lot of people kind of poo-poo completely on defensiveness, and I don't like it. I don't think it has a place in parenting, but in a lot of ways, defensiveness is kind of like it's kind of a protection reaction. I mean, you know, if we get embarrassed or upset or hurt, mm-hmm, you know, defensiveness is kind of one of our ways to keep ourselves safe from having that happen.
It's a coping strategy.
So I want people to hear me say that if you are a defensive person, I mean, I don't want you to beat yourself up. It's normal. It's understandable. And in some cases, Jeff, I would even go as far to say that it's not unreasonable. Sometimes, sure, it's very reasonable.
Yeah, especially when somebody's actively attacking you. Well, it's natural. It's reasonable to be defensive.
Exactly. The problem is that it doesn't belong in regular communication. It's an okay feeling. It's okay to feel defensive, but it's not a good thing to try to communicate to somebody through that filter of that kind of defensiveness. So when we find ourselves getting defensive, the tendency that we have to do is try to rationalize, mm-hmm, why we did that thing. So let's take just the other day. I was with my kids, and I came in, and my wife has been sick. My three kids have had RSV, and for those of you who don't know RSV, it's like a super cold. I mean, like it's a cold that, like, could literally kill my infant if we're not careful. I mean,
right.
It's that dangerous.
Really.
Very serious. But they, you know, they've all been sick and coughing. Every time they cough, they start crying because it hurts so bad, and just it's just been a horrible experience. And so I've been kind of primary caregiver this week. Corey has had it as well, and she's been sick and just down. And so there's been a lot of stress and struggles going on. A lot of, you know, I had to work from home one time this week, and that created extra stress because of the stuff going on here that I couldn't handle. And there was all that stuff, and I snapped at my kids. Just blah, blah, blah. You know, I just snapped at them. The first thing I felt, you know, was I was upset, and I started getting defensive. And they said, Dad, you said that we don't yell at each other. And of course, I'm like, oh, man,
yeah, but
right.
your first inclination is to justify why you were yelling. Well, you guys got
because and that's what I started doing. I said, well, guys, I'm doing this because y'all were doing this. So first off, what am I doing?
Blaming.
I'm blaming them for my emotions. I'm blaming them for my short temper. I'm blaming them because I'm feeling stressed out. Right? What does that teach a kid to do later in life?
Well, not take responsibility and
blame
everything else on everyone.
And so I started getting defensive. I started trying to justify. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this because y'all did this and y'all did that and blah blah blah. And so the fastest way to get yourself to a genuine I'm sorry is the best. You want to try to get to that point to where you can say, I'm sorry, guys. Cut out the defensive. So defensiveness just doesn't belong in communication. Be honest. It's okay to make mistakes. I think parents, we really struggle with that sometimes.
Oh,
we don't want to admit to kids, guys, I screwed up. Yeah. I told you guys it's not okay to yell in this house, and I did anyway, and I messed up, and I want you to hear me say that I'm very, very sorry. See, for me, that comes from pride. I don't like to be wrong. I don't like to mess up. It's kind of that's the defensiveness that I get into. And so sometimes doing that it's just so hard for me. But I'm going to tell you, I've seen my kids get choked up when I do this.
Mm-hmm.
Just sometimes understanding and hearing those words y'all didn't deserve that.
And it softens them too, because
where
it hurts
instantly.
Your feelings before, and maybe they're a little bit mad or upset, when they see you being genuinely repentant, they're like, oh, Daddy, it's okay. You're not. No, you're the best, Daddy. Thank you. You know, and suddenly, you know, you're back where you need to be relationally.
And I think it's good, too, because it also teaches them, hey, I mean, they're going to mess up, too. Inevitably, if they're, you know, the human condition is that we often mess up. And they need to know the skill set of
how do you handle a mess up?
How do you handle a mess up? That's exactly right. What good way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah, getting defensive is a real communication stopper. Because if I have something I want to say to somebody else and I'm putting myself out there that I'm letting them know that it bothered me and that I have a problem with it, and then suddenly they're rationalizing and justifying their behavior, well, you know, once again, we said that that's understandable and it's natural. And it may explain why you behave a certain way, but it doesn't excuse your behavior. And that's the distinction that we have a hard time making. You know, I had a professor one time that was his phrase. He said, well, that may explain it, but it doesn't excuse it.
Yeah, right? That's good.
And that's basically what defensiveness is, you know. You know, Trey, you were being confessional and you said that you were a little bit short-tempered with your kids this week. I mentioned a couple podcasts ago that I had lost my temper and I had hurt my daughter Eleanor's feelings. Did I ever tell that story about what happened at the movies?
It didn't sound familiar. Let's go
all
over
right,
it again.
All right. Well, this is a time when Jeff messed up, when I lost my temper and you know, kind of similar to what you were saying, that I ended up yelling at Eleanor. We'd gone to see a movie, and one of the things that we like to do at the end of a movie is I'll get my iPhone out and we'll do a little recording where we will rate the movie.
Oh, the ERS,
the
right.
The ERS,
right.
The Emory Rating Scale, right? And I love doing this, Trey. I think it's really cool, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from it, and so it's something I highly anticipate, right?
Yeah, I read the ERSs, honestly, seriously.
Yeah, so I've got my camera out, and this was something I did specially with Ellie. I didn't have the other kids with me. We'd gone with some friends, and so Eleanor was there, and there were two other dads that both had kids about Eleanor's age. They're all friends, and we were happy to be able to do something fun for our kids. And we just came out with this great movie, right? And so I pull my iPhone out, and I'm a little bit nervous because I look at my iPhone and I know I'm not going to be home for a little while. I'm not going to be any place where I can charge it. And I'm at 20%, right? It's giving me that little warning of, you know, low battery,
yeah.
Right? And I'm like, oh man, we don't have much time here, but I still want to go ahead and do the ERS. And the thing about recording video and then uploading it to Facebook, which is what I normally do, is that it eats battery power.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to do this as quickly as possible, you know? And so I prime everybody ahead of time. I'm like, all right, I'm going to ask you for your favorite part. Go ahead and think about it so you can say it. We're only going to have – I try to do it in less than a minute, you know, because I don't want it to be super long. And so I want to get everybody's opinion, what they thought about the movie and the recommendation, their favorite part. And then, of course, I normally do the wrap-up where I'll hand the phone to one of my kids and I'll have them video me as I'm giving the wrap-up of here's what I think and, you know, how many stars it is on the Emory rating scale. And so the kids love to do this. And so Ellie's ready for this. So I start recording it and I'm getting everybody's stuff. And I finally it comes to my part and I hand the phone to Eleanor and she's holding it up and I can tell she's got it centered on me and she's got this big smile on her face. And I'm starting to say my thing. And then suddenly she takes the phone and like – you know, redirects it. And so she's like focusing just over my shoulder. And I know I'm not on camera. I'm like, Ellie. And I pull it back to me. And she smiles like, haha, I'm having a little bit of fun. Right. And so I start saying my thing again. And she does it again. And I'm like, Eleanor. And so I go from this, hey, yeah, to Eleanor. All right, put the camera back. And then, you know, and so she does it again. And she does it a third time. And finally, I guess there's no better way. I almost slapped the phone out of her hand. I reached over and I grabbed it. I said, give that to me. Fine. We're not going to do it. And she looks at me like, what did I do wrong? She was just being playful. She had no idea that I was low on battery power. She had no idea that I was anxious about not being able to upload. She had no idea what was going on in my head. All she knows is that she was trying to be sweet and playful. And I suddenly turned on her and with venom dripping in my voice, yelled at her. And on top of that, Trey, I didn't just yell at her. Then, in front of her friends, I went on to explain to her that she was doing something that upset me, right? I was like, Eleanor, I asked you two times to put that back on me. And her eyes got as big as saucers. No kidding, like anime size. I mean, her eyes were just like – and she had this little purse with her, and she pulled it up in front of her face, and she just kind of stood there. And we said our goodbyes to our friends, and we went off to the car. And when we got to the car – she got in the car, and she'd been holding that purse in front of her face because she didn't want to cry in front of her friends. I had embarrassed her. And I had no excuse, right? And yet, even though I knew in my head I had no excuse that I had done the wrong thing, that I – even though when she asked me, Daddy, why did you embarrass me in front of my friends? You know what I did?
What'd you do?
I got defensive. Oh, my goodness. I got defensive, and I started trying to blame her for how I behaved, right? And that same kind of trap. I said, well, Eleanor, you have to understand what you were doing was – and I heard myself. I heard it.
Yeah.
And so now, although I hadn't done anything good up to this point, and I'm being confessional that I really lost my cool and I did the wrong thing, I will say that I did what we're talking about here in number four. Instead of getting defensive, I got to a genuine, I'm sorry. I heard what I was saying, and I was like, Eleanor, I did. I yelled at you. And honestly, I need to apologize to you because you weren't doing anything wrong, and I'm sorry I yelled at you. And then I went on – pardon me. I went on to explain what I was thinking and why I got upset as a way of explaining. And I told her, baby, I'm explaining myself, but this doesn't excuse my behavior. I shouldn't have yelled at you, and I am so sorry. I hope you can forgive me. And it's a humbling thing
to ask
your you know, 7-year-old daughter to forgive you because you've misbehaved. But I also think it's a redeemable experience because, once again, when she sees me handling it, did I handle it poorly? Yes. But then I came and I did the right thing to make up for it and do that relationship repair. I didn't wait days. I didn't wait weeks. I didn't just gloss over it. I apologized and I asked for forgiveness. And that I think that's how you handle it. The sooner you get to I'm sorry, the sooner the other person can stop resenting you and you can get to that softening point and you can repair a relationship.
Man, I think that's heavy. I think that's really heavy. And I don't think there's anything I can follow up with that, man. I'm serious. I think that's good. I think it seems funny. It seems like it could be an awful, rough situation, but I think that was a beautiful moment in its own way, and that's good stuff.
Well, it's a good segue, actually, number five, because it's one thing to say I'm sorry, even to be genuine about it in the moment. But number five, the communication mistake here is to always say I'm sorry but never do anything different. Right.
If we're
always saying I'm sorry, but I'm never changing, we are setting ourselves up for relationship failure. What an apology does, or what it should do, is buy you a chance to do something right. It's an opportunity to correct things or make it better. But if you keep making the same mistake, if you keep doing the same knuckleheaded thing over and over and over, every time you say I'm sorry, it's going to be meaningless, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Not only that, but it's going to get frustrating because the other person can legitimately say, you know what? You say you're sorry, but you aren't really because your words and your behavior aren't matching up.
Yeah, you know, even when you think about the idea of I'm sorry is just expressing remorse. It's expressing that I feel bad for what I did. And I think you're exactly right. I think it's one of the key components that does this. And I'll tell you, I say this through gritted teeth. I'll be like, guys, I lost my cool. And I'm very sorry. And I can do that pretty easy in most cases. But let me tell you where the teeth start to grit is when I have to say those words. I'll make sure that doesn't happen again.
Oh, yeah, because then you're holding yourself accountable. Yeah, you're putting it out there.
I want my back door. I want to leave that back door crack just a little bit. So that way if it happens again, well, I mean, I tried, right? So we use these phrases and thought processes to try to justify not actually really making any changes. And, guys, I'm saying this as a self-evaluation here. And so we leave that back door open, like you said, to not hold ourselves accountable. Because the minute that I teach my kids – if you say you're going to do something, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a part of me that's like, well, it's good that at least I understand the gravity of that, but a lot of times I don't want to change that. I don't want to spend the time to make sure that I don't snap at them whenever they do something right. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to spend that time because that's hard for me.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to put myself in my kid's shoes sometimes, especially with what I think of as little kid things, right? It's hard for me to put that in there. I think this is such a good one.
We want their forgiveness, but we're not willing to do the,
work that
comes with it, right? Wow, that's great stuff, Trey. I probably see this a lot in counseling. When a family system, whether it's parents and kids or whether it's husband and wife, when they finally get to the point where they're coming to counseling, and they're sitting there on the couch in my office, and one of them says, "I said I was sorry."
Yeah.
You know, and the other one looks and just kind of rolls their eyes. I'm sitting here going, I'm reading their body language thing and saying to myself, "Wow. I bet they've heard that a lot. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
You said you're sorry, but you don't feel sorry.
That's right. And the evidence that you're sorry is going to be behavior change. Right?
Yeah, that's
good. You can say it all you want, but if your words aren't supported by your behaviors, your words are meaningless.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, always saying I'm sorry but never changing, wanting forgiveness but not wanting to do the work that comes with repentance, that's good stuff. So – communication mistake. Once again, it's not always the words that we're saying. It's sometimes the behavior that goes along with it. So we can communicate to our partner, to our kids, that we're not really sorry because we don't want to do the work that goes along with it.
So number six is being late. Now, we're going to say, should we segue this with the idea that it's being late repeatedly?
Sure.
Now, understand, everybody gets behind. I mean, we all get to that point. Yeah, exactly. We have weird things that happen. We can't find a shoe in the morning or something like that. I mean, those kinds of things are a part of our lives. So we have to do that. I mean, one of the things my wife is – I'm a very lazy person when it comes to, like, time management and stuff like that. And my wife is very type A, very organized, very – if you're 15 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late. And if you're 15 minutes late, you're fired. I mean, that's just kind of her mentality. And so you want to talk about a crisis of conscience when we first got married and the struggles that it created. But she's taught me a lot of these kinds of things to start sharpening those things up.
Right.
But so everybody does get behind from time to time. But when you do it over and over, when you're habitually late, it absolutely communicates to that person that I don't care about your time. I don't care about you. You're not necessarily important to me, at least not as important as the things that I am doing. Mm-hmm. My wife will attest to this, and she's very open, very honest about this, but she of course, y'all know she's very type A, very organized, and she has been since she was a little kid, and one of the reasons is why is that her mom often would – I mean, she'd get left at school for an hour and a half after school was over, and her mom would come and pick her up late. And so, I mean, and I was talking to her about that a while back, and she said, you know, Trey, it hurt. It hurt my feelings. It was very deeply painful to me when she didn't show up, when she would forget about me. She tells, and I want to make sure you guys hear, I mean, my mother-in-law has made a change that only I could see being a God thing, mm-hmm. That happened years afterwards. But she's made such a change. She's not the same lady she used to be. But she talked about one time having to walk home and getting home about dark, you know, from where she had to walk and those kinds of things. And so being late over and over and over can be very, very hurtful, even when we don't mean it to be. We're not trying to hurt feelings. We're not trying to make somebody upset. We're not trying to say you're not important to me. But it can be very, very painful.
It does. It communicates something to the other person when we do not respect their time. And you know, you were confessional earlier when I forget if you said it was number three, number four that you were most guilty of looking at this list. If I had to say the one that I'm most guilty of is this one right here. So much so that it's a joke in our family of running on Emory time that we have our own we have our own time frame. It's like especially when it comes to getting out of the house, right? And so it feels like whether it's getting to school on time or whether it's getting to church on time or just our morning routine, Trey, we have a habit of being late repeatedly, and so much so that honestly, I get a jolt of confidence when on those rare occasions when I'm early. I'm sitting here going, man, this is great. It feels so good because it happens so rarely. Look, I'm on time. Look, I'm ahead of time. This is something I have a really hard time with. And so while you can get a little bit of grace if it's something that happens occasionally, when you are habitually late, it just shows that you're not very considerate. And the thing is, Trey, I don't think that people who are habitually late, speaking as a person himself who is always running behind, I don't think that it's inconsideration.
Yeah,
trying intentionally to delay the other person's schedule. But what I need to realize is even if I don't think that that's happening, it is deeply inconsiderate and disrespectful to the other person. And I put on our show notes, if this describes you, consider working hard to develop the habit of punctuality.
Yeah.
And so this is me preaching to the choir. When I talk about communication mistakes, what am I communicating to my spouse, to my kids, to my clients, to my business partners when I am running late? And the irony is, as I sit here and say this to you, we were scheduled to start this at 9 o'clock this morning. What time did I show up? 9:05. Right. This is honestly, this is something I have a really hard time with. So, preaching to the choir here, I recognize that, this is something that I need to do as well, is to develop that habit of punctuality, because when we're punctual, it communicates just the opposite. It communicates, wow, I'm here and I'm ready and I'm engaged and this is important to me. And by proxy, you're important to me because I respect your time. And that's something that I do want to communicate to the people that I'm connected to.
So the next one, Jeff, is playing the victim. This is a favorite of mine too. And I'm going to have to ask you a question because I was trying to remember a word the other day. I was talking to a family about this that had written in at the Family Podcast Network. And I'll have to get you to remember a word. But so playing the victim. I think a lot of people hate this idea because we hear the word victim and we're like, oh, yeah, well, I don't do that. Right? But I think people would be surprised at what this is. So mm-hmm. What is playing the victim basically? It's essentially like a blaming attitude towards another person, right? So that can mm-hmm. be your spouse or your kids as well.
Yeah.
And so what it says to that person is like the other person is intentionally hurting you, even if that's not necessarily the case. And so here are kind of some of those phrases, and this is where I need you to help me to remember that word, because I keep wanting to call it an infinitive, and I don't think that's what it is. But it's those phrases like, you know, you always do this, or you never do that, right? What is that word, Jeff? I wanted to say infinitive, because like infinity, but...
Right. I call it using absolutes.
Absolutes. That's one of the ones.
There's other phrases for it. I've heard it called different things, but I refer to it as going to the absolute end of that. When we say... you always, what we're doing is linguistically, we're setting up a situation where the person cannot logically respond.
That's good.
If it's true that somebody always does something, well, then how are they supposed to respond? With, well, you're right. Well, and that ends the argument because you're right. But what we tend to do is using those absolutes invites the other person to defend themselves and contradict you. You always get the front seat. You know, if this is an argument between my kids, you always get the front seat. Well, what's my kid going to say? Right? And now it's I'm directly contradicting you, right? And so I've invited the other person to be defensive, and now that they're defensive, aha, now it's on. Now we can argue, right? So it doesn't avoid an argument. In fact, it actually invites an argument.
You know, even think about it like with your teen or something like that you're struggling to get taking the trash out, right? Well, you never take the trash out when I ask you to. Mm-hmm. All it takes for a teen is that one time mm-hmm. where they did it. When right. you asked for them to go, it's a stupid argument. Of course I did. There was that one time. And even if it is, and I'd be willing to bet there were more than that, but even if there was just that one time that they did it.
But even then, when the kid responds with, well, I did it the other day, right? And they point out that one example as a way of counteracting yep. the you never do it when I ask you to. You say, well, I did it the other day. What's the comeback from the parent? Okay, maybe that one time.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
You know, and it just continues the argument. We're not looking for solutions at that point. All we're doing is each of us is trying to make ourselves out to be more victimized than the other person.
Yeah,
right?
That's good.
And so that's why we call this a communication mistake, because when we play the victim, it feeds back in on that inviting the other person to be defensive. And you know, going back to number four, once we get defensive, well, we're communicating yep. to the other person that that we're trying to rationalize things. We're trying to excuse our behavior, you know? When I was thinking about this, this idea of playing the victim, you mentioned that sometimes we don't see how we do it. You know, we say, "Oh, that's not me. I don't do that." We had on some paperwork when you and I were working at New Horizons. Part of the paperwork asked the parents to fill out this scale of how often things happen. Right?
Yeah.
And one of the questions on that was. On a scale of I think it was like 1 to 7, where 1 is this never happens, and 7 was this always happens, and then in between, you know, it happens sometimes. Anyhow, so you were supposed to select a number on the scale. But the question was, I feel like my child misbehaves just to annoy me.
Yeah, annoy me. Yeah.
Right? Just to make me mad. Right? Okay. Think about that for a second. If we in our heads are interpreting our kids' behavior as something they're doing deliberately to make me mad, isn't that exactly how we define playing the victim?
Absolutely. I mean, you could literally translate that sentence, you always do things to me. I mean, it fits, yeah.
Yeah, and so what we're doing is we're communicating. When we take on that victim role, we're communicating that the other person is intentionally doing something to harm us, right? Now, if that's the case, pointing it out is not going to help.
Yeah, not going to help.
If it's not the case, assuming it's the case is not going to help. So playing the victim, all it does is sets us up for further argument, further conflict, puts us in a position to blame the other partner, to where we get into kind of this shouting match of trying to find out who's the most victimized.
Yeah, that's really good.
It is a communication mistake.
And
sure.
I think this is one of the more subtle ones. This one's kind of a hard one to put your thumb on mm-hmm. because, I mean, I think we think of a victim as somebody who, you know, like a gunshot or a burglary or something like that. And we hate that word. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to even associate ourselves with it. But I think parents play victims with their kids
sure.
more than we care to admit because we feel powerless because we don't feel like there's any way we can make the change. And so it's easier just to kind of fall back to this mentality of, well, that person always does this to me,
yeah.
right? And instead of, okay, how can I help fix this? How can mm-hmm. we help make changes with this? Okay, you're having a hard time getting that trash out. What do you need help for that? I mean,
sure.
is it incentive? You know, instead of trying to find solutions, this is kind of, and I'm saying this because this, again, this is that self-evaluation thing, but it's, we do that. I do that. Let me phrase that. I do that because I don't want to come up with those solutions. I don't want to take the time to think,
right.
how could I do this? And so if I do that, then to justify me doing nothing, I've got to be a victim, and
yeah.
I've got to make it all that other person's fault so they'll go sit down and do something and fix this problem because, well, it's not me. What? It's not me.
Well, you said it right when you connected victimhood with powerlessness.
Yes.
And even people who have truly been victimized by a crime or by abuse or something like that, when they have that victim mentality of I've been hurt or I've been wronged, even though that's true – to keep them in that victim role is going to keep them powerless. And therapeutically, yes. One of the things that I will try and do is I will try to help them adopt a mentality of I can continue to be a victim or I can become a victor and I can feel powerful out of this and finding ways to help them take charge of that those feelings of vulnerability so that they feel powerful instead of powerless is part of the recovery process. So even when victimhood is something that actually happened, it's not helpful to stay there.
Yeah, that's good. All right, Jeff, we've got three more, and we've only got a few minutes left over. So we're going to jump through this just a little bit quicker. Sorry to have to rush y'all on this. We want to make sure we value y'all's time here.
Good
so,
stuff, though.
Y'all, these are powerful, powerful. Number eight is jumping to conclusions. Mm. So this is also like this mentality of mind reading. I think parents – let me rephrase that. I know as a parent I'm very guilty of this. I have this mentality of thinking that I know exactly what's going on even when I don't have all the information. I did it to Jeff just a minute. I'm very distracted. I'm very excited about something that happened today. And so Jeff was sitting there, and he asked me a question. And I gave him this answer, and I could tell by the perplexity in his face. I was like, oh, man, crap, I missed this question. And I said, okay, what'd you say again? And he started his question. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I wasn't anywhere near that. So sometimes it's distractions, or sometimes we're authentically and genuinely in the moment, and we're really listening, and we're trying to figure out what our kids are saying, and but we think that we have this idea of what they're wanting, or we're jumping, you know, or maybe even sometimes we're upset and we're angry and we're frustrated and we're trying to read their mind. And so we presume that we know what that other person is thinking or feeling. And then even worse, we think we know why they're doing that.
Oh, yeah.
When in reality, we don't have all the information yet. And I tell you, I see so many times where I'll get two reasonable people, a kid and a mom or a dad in my office or both, and they'll sit down and they both explain to me the problem that they're having. And then they get done and I'm like, okay, what's the problem here? I mean, you guys both have legitimate points here. Have you ever played that game? Was it Mad Gab? You ever played Mad Gab before? And that's the word – they'll give you these funny-looking words, and you have to read them together. And you know, so it might be like what's a good one? Oh, I can't think of one. But anyway, so it sounds like – it looks like garbled words on there, but when you read them out, it makes an actual word that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything's there that you need, but they're not hearing it quite right. And you say it over and over and over, and finally like, oh, you're saying printer, you know.
Suddenly it clicks, yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of times that's what happens with – kids trying to understand their parents or whatnot is that we're not quite seeing it, so we jump to that conclusion.
I joke sometimes, Trey, that the only exercise that I get sometimes is jumping to conclusions and pushing my luck. and unfortunately that can be true sometimes, especially when it comes to those relationships. Once again, you may be a really effective communicator in a lot of different areas, but when it comes to falling into maladaptive patterns with people that we're close to, I think this is one that happens a lot. Because we know the other person so well, at some point we stop doing the good active listening communication stuff and we just jump to conclusions, right? And while sometimes we do know our partner really well. I mean, my wife and I finish each other's sentences all the time. And I love my kids' sense of humor. Ethan, the other day, I saw a post on his fourth grade teacher's Facebook page. She's one of my friends on Facebook. And she posted, one of my students told me a joke today. And when I read the joke, I knew, I was like, that's Ethan. My son said that to her because it was so corny. I knew it had to be. And sure enough, after she told the joke, she said, Ethan makes me smile. And I was like, that's my boy, you know, telling corny jokes. Sometimes we know the other person so well that we figure, well, we know what they're thinking and we know why. But that pattern of jumping to the conclusion of we know what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and we know why they're feeling that way serves us very, very poorly when we get into conflict, when we're trying to resolve some miscommunication, when we're trying to get through some situation where our feelings are hurt. Jumping to conclusions is almost universally a bad thing to do. We need to – rather than jumping to conclusions, we need to gather more information. We need to ask open-ended questions. We need to seek understanding before we respond.
You know, one of my favorite things to do this before we move on to the next one is to take them and ask them, so you're saying this, and I try to quote back to them with as much accuracy as I can. And if they say no, then I start all the other. Okay, so you're saying this. Well, yeah. Okay, so you hear that? Well, yeah. So you hear that. Yeah, listen to the intonation.
Yeah.
When the tone goes down like that at the end, that's uncertainty. Well, yeah. Right. That is one of the classic signs of lack of certainty. Okay, so maybe I'll start it over, or maybe I say, okay, tell me what I'm getting wrong.
Right.
Then they'll say it, and then I start over again. Okay, so you're saying this. Yeah, okay. Now, okay, yeah, did you hear that? Again, the tone goes down again. That means uncertainty. okay, so I didn't, maybe I'm getting something just a little bit, and I'll keep doing that with the kid over and over and over until I get it right. You might think that that sounds frustrating to a kid, but kids love it when you're doing your dangdest to try to understand them.
That's an amazing thing about paraphrasing, that skill that you're talking about right there. Not only does it give us clarity, not only do we finally have an understanding of what the other person actually said, but the process of gaining that understanding communicates to the other person, what you said to me was important, and by association, you were important to me. So it is a relationship building thing to make sure that we're gathering all those informations and doing that paraphrasing. Okay. All right. So number nine, we're getting closer to the end of the list here. Number nine is something that that honestly is probably the most destructive thing on this list when it comes to damaging relationships, and that is bad mouthing the other person. We also refer to this as in counseling as invalidation. Now, bad mouthing the other person or invalidating them, it can be overt, like when you call them names, right? If somebody calls me a jerk, you know, they are taking everything else that I am, you know, a father, a brother, a counselor, a friend, and they're reducing it down to one thing. You know, I might be a jerk, right? But for the when you start calling me the name, you're bad mouthing me, and that's pretty overt, right? I know exactly what they are, and they're saying it to my face. Jeff, you're being a jerk, right? But invalidation and bad mouthing, it actually can be subtle. And you mentioned this before.
Yeah.
We see sarcasm, right? There's a story about a lady that's talking to a counselor, and she's not overtly calling her husband stupid or lazy or anything like that.
Right.
But she's doing it in a subtle way. She says something like, "Well, when I came to the door with groceries in either hand, and I needed some help, it should have been obvious to any person that I needed some help. I mean, as I was doing this, obviously I needed some help, right?"
Yeah.
She doesn't point at her husband and say, "He didn't help me." What she's doing is she's in a roundabout way calling him either
lazy, not helpful,
lazy or inconsiderate or not helpful. And she's doing it in a covert way. And bad mouthing can sometimes be done not only to a person's face, not even subtly, like with sarcasm or, you know, with that example I gave. Sometimes we do it behind people's backs. You know, we don't even do it to their face. And when it gets back to them, it doubly wounds them, because not only did we do it, but we did it in a way where we're trying to be two-faced about it, where we don't want to say it to them, and we don't want to hurt their feelings, but we're willing to do it. And what we're doing in that circumstance is we're communicating, we're demonstrating how little respect we have for them.
You know, this is so important, especially like even as – I mean, I see this with little kids, but I think of this more commonly with teens and parents that came into my office with teenagers. And, you know, whenever we do this, when we badmouth that person, again, even if it's in that subtle, that covert way like Jeff talks about, when we do that – I mean, first off, Jeff and I adopt a huge approach of nobody makes you feel anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people can do things that they maybe even know trigger us, but ultimately our emotions are our responsibility, just like our body odor is, right? We have to take responsibility on working for those things. We can't use that blaming attitude to blame other people for them, right? So, but the reality is that let's say I badmouth another person, right? I can't make them do anything or say anything back to me in a certain way, but how do we invite them to act?
That's right.
So if I'm badmouthing them and say, "Well, you never take the trash out," right? What are we setting ourselves up for? What are we inviting the reaction from our teens to be? To be rude, to be hurtful, to be mean. And we can't figure out why they're so rude and disrespectful when in a lot of cases we set the pins up and knock them down for them.
That's right. We're setting them up to feel resentful toward us.
Exactly.
So bad mouthing is always a communication mistake. And if you don't have something nice to say about somebody, just don't say it.
Yeah, go thumper on it too. And I'll be honest, guys, we do our 100% to try to remove all sarcasm out of our vernacular at home. We try. I mean, outside of the fact that it's kind of hard for kids to understand abstract, sarcasm has a tendency to not come from a good place. It's not a loving, caring place. It's educational and teaching kids something. It typically comes out of my emotional crap that I haven't dealt with that's coming out towards my kids rather than trying to help them. It's not a good thing. And then last, number 10 is thinking that doing something once is enough. Jeff, I want you to take this one up. This was brilliant, man. Yeah. What a great one to end on.
Yeah. You know, as we're – this whole discussion today has been common communication mistakes that we make in relationships. And, you know, all these things that we listed, the other nine things on this list, if we acknowledge – and I asked you at the beginning, you know, listen to this list, and if anything jumps out, you say, "Oh, man, that's something I have a problem with." Trey and I have both identified which ones on this list are our biggest challenges. So as you're listening to this and you think, "Man, I'm going to change that, okay? I'm not going to say I'm sorry but not do anything different. I'm not going to play the victim anymore. I'm not going to jump to conclusions."
Good.
Right? If we're willing to say, "Yeah, we're going to," and then we do it, but we only do it halfway, if it doesn't last, it's meaningless. There's an old story about a woman who asked her husband, she's like, "How come you never say that you love me?" He says, "Well, I said it on the day we got married, and that'll be enough, right? I said it once, and while that may sound kind of romantic and sweet, and oh yeah, well guys, they're not very expressive. You know, honestly, if you're in a long term relationship with somebody and they're not telling you that they love you on a regular basis, how sucky is that?
Yeah, that's no good.
Right? And so we need to recognize where our challenges are, where our failings are in these communication mistakes. And then we need to do something about it. But not only do we need to do something, but it needs to be lasting change. We need to do something because if we only do it once and then we fall back in these old patterns, that's not going to change our relationship. What we do when we do it halfway is we're setting up a situation where what we're really communicating to the other person is that we're not really committed to improving our relationships.
Yeah, that's good. You know, we talk about this over at FBN a lot, but we call it the nasty C word. You know, in our shows, it's the nasty C word. It's consistency. And consistency is the hardest thing. It's easy in a lot of ways to make changes on this. And don't get me wrong. A lot of these changes that we're suggesting aren't easy. I mean, those ones that I identified being my worst were not easy to make changes. But let me tell you what was a lot harder than making those changes. It was sticking to them. When the rubber meets the road, when I'm stressed out, when there's stuff going on at work, when I don't know how we're going to pay this bill, whenever all of these things are going on and I'm worried about this and I'm upset about that and this didn't go the way I wanted to, let me tell you, that's when it becomes hard. That nasty little C word. It's hard to stay consistent, to keep doing these things when I'm frustrated and I'm angry and the kids come in and they break something after I told them not to do it. There's that part of me that just wants to rear in and just start, you know, you guys are always running around, right? There's that bad mouthing, right? And stopping myself, taking a deep breath and saying, guys, I need y'all to calm down a little bit because, you know, that's hard.
Well, and here's what I tell my kids. I'll include this as the challenge to you listeners. When you hear this stuff, when you're identifying, yeah, I need to work on that, don't beat yourselves up. If you commit to working on it and you find yourself falling back in moments of stress, falling back on old coping mechanisms or doing this, here's what I tell my kids. Instead of beating yourself up about it, at the moment that you realize you need to change something, do it. At that moment, change it. Don't say, oh, I wish I could have done it, or oh, I'm a lousy person because I keep doing this. Say, right here, right now, I'm going to do it differently. And if you can do that, you will start to build momentum toward making the changes that you want to make and becoming better, more effective communicators and having better relationships. And that's what we're all about on the Real Family Guys podcast.
All right, guys. Well, that's all that we have for this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. Man, I'm sure glad you guys are here. As always, we ask that if you guys have any topics, thoughts, things you guys want to hear on, topics you want to hear Jeff and I go over, we love that. Or if you just want to tell us, man, we love your show and those kinds of things. I'm going to tell you, that fuels Jeff and I. We love that kind of stuff. Shoot that stuff over to you. We want to make sure that we're valuing your time while you're here and giving you guys that actionable stuff that you want to hear topics on. We're going to cover it for you. You can do that by going to Trey Gibson at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. And
or Jeff at TexasFamilyInstitute.org. You can shoot us an email there. And I really want some feedback on this. You know, we gave you this top 10 list. You know, shoot us a message. Even if you're not sending questions or topics for us to think about later, go ahead and let us know which of these 10 things are things that you have a problem with. I'm really interested to know.
All right, guys. Well, that's all that we've got for this episode. I hope you guys have a great week and weekend this week. And if nothing else, Jeff and I will see you guys next Friday.
Vaya con Dios.